Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Tatapi devak sa patnyan. No pikshya iti manmahe. Tatas tanmula konani. Niyung shvasman anuvratan. Tatapi devak sa patnyan. No pikshya iti manmahe. Tatas tanmula konani. Niyum shvasman anuvratan. Tata api, still, deva, the demigods, sapatnyat, due to enmity, na upekshya, should not be neglected, vidiman mahe, this is our opinion. Tataha, therefore, tanmulakanani, to uproot them completely. Niyungshva, engage. Asman, us, anuvratan, who are ready to follow you. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Nonetheless, because of their enmity, our opinion is that the demigods should not be neglected. Therefore, to uproot them completely, engage us in fighting with them, for we are ready to follow you. Purport. According to moral instructions, one should not neglect to extinguish fire completely, treat diseases completely, and clear debts completely. Otherwise, they will increase and later be difficult to stop. Therefore, the ministers advised Kamsa to uproot his enemies completely. Demon advisors here are talking about, and what Prabhupada explains in the purport, these are mundane rules of behavior from the Dharma Shastras. That is, you have duties to perform, you cannot neglect them. And eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Defending is also one of the unavoidable occupations of material life. Everyone who's living in this world, well, one of them is avoidable. Mating can be avoided. But even a sannyasi cannot avoid eating, sleeping. Some, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, ate very little and they slept very little. Absolute minimum. Sleeping less than an hour a day sometimes. This cannot be imitated. Eating not every day. Eating a little bit every other day maybe. This is bare minimum. But something has to be eaten and the body requires some rest, no matter who you are. Sex can be avoided by those who are spiritually advanced. Others can't avoid it because they can't control their senses. And defending, we may not be killing anybody else, we may be nonviolent, But there's nonviolent defense. You put clothes on your body because you have to defend yourself from the cold and the heat. You may not hurt an insect, but you'll chase them away. You won't let the mosquitoes bite you because that will cause malaria. So you stay in a place, you use some herb or something to scare them or repel the mosquitoes so they don't bite you. This is defense. What's a story about a snake? Some sage saved the snake? Which? What is the story? About the snake, he was told by his guru not to bite anybody anymore. But the people will come and try to kill me because I'm a poisonous snake. So he said, okay, you defend yourself, you show your fangs, but don't bite.
Oh, this is not morning.
No, okay. Anyway, the point is, instruction is, defend yourself by pretending that you're going to bite, but don't bite. So defense can't be avoided. So many people are trying to abuse us all the time, take our money and use us in various inappropriate ways. We have to defend ourselves. A woman has to defend her chastity against so many people. So it can't be avoided. No one can avoid having to do some sort of defending. That's law of nature. Only way to avoid all these three things is to not take birth in the material world. Stay in the spiritual world. But when you come to the material world, even if you're a great saint, even if you're a pure devotee, you have to eat, you have to sleep, you have to protect your body, protect your mind. If you don't do basic things to keep yourself fit, then your mind will be disturbed. If you don't clean yourself, then you'll go crazy in a few days. If your body is dirty, if your body is not in good order, if you don't get enough sleep, you also go crazy. So you have to keep the mind, you have to protect the mind also from extreme disturbance. That means you need a certain amount of comfort and even sense gratification, so the mind doesn't become too disturbed. These things are required as long as you're living in the material world. And that's appropriate. Sometimes we have enemies. We don't look for enemies. Yudhishthira never looked for any enemies. He never identified even Duryodhana as his enemy. Therefore, he's called Ajatashatruhu, the man whose enemy was never born. This is a poetic way to say that he didn't have any enemies. The enemy he had wasn't born. That means he didn't exist. That means he didn't have an enemy. Like Prabhupada saying, something is conspicuous by its absence. That means it doesn't exist. So someone who isn't born doesn't exist. No enemy at all. At the same time, he didn't identify anybody as his enemies, but a lot of people identified them as his enemies, themselves as his enemies. Duryodhana and everybody on his side was ready to destroy Yudhishthira at all costs, by deceptive and illicit means if necessary. So if that's not an enemy, what is? So he never looked for an enemy, but still he had so many enemies. Even Ajatashatru, the man whose enemy was never born, had so many enemies. And he had to defend himself against them. He could not avoid that. He had to take up arms. He had to engage in diplomacy. Sanatana Goswami had to engage in diplomacy. Going to Vrindavan to take up the life of a beggar, Kaupi na Kanta Ashrito. But he had to engage in politics to get out of jail so he could go to Vrindavan. He had to bribe the jailkeeper to get out and use his wits. So that was defense also, self-defense. Get yourself out of jail, even if it means cheating. So it's normal to have to defend yourself when enemies attack. You didn't ask for them, but they're attacking. You're not trying to consider them your enemies, but they're trying to destroy you, or abuse you, or cheat you, and you have to defend yourself. A devotee is going out to do business, spending Krishna's money, his guru's money. He can't let people take away that money unfairly. He can't let himself be cheated, because it's not his money. It's his guru's money. So he has to defend himself against getting cheated. That's natural and justified. One can still be a pure devotee and be engaged in defending. Arjuna was a pure devotee. He was fighting like anything. But the demons don't know what's appropriate and inappropriate. Karya, karya. They don't know what's to be done and what's not to be done. And therefore, they engage in inappropriate defense. They find enemies where there really aren't any enemies. They create enemies unnecessarily. And they're engaged in so much violence. Kshayaya jagato hitaha. Because they don't know when not to defend, when not to get violent. They're always quarreling with one another and with innocent people, committing violence against each other and against the innocent people who should be protected rather than abused. So here we have the demoniac advisors of Kamsa telling him that we cannot neglect the demigods. Don't just ignore them. Even though we just told you that they can't do much to you, that they're powerless, doesn't mean that we should just ignore them. Because they can't stop you, O Kamsa, doesn't mean you should let them go on the way they are. You should destroy them. The natural function of the material mind, the intelligence, rather, has three natural functions, basically. Attraction, repulsion, and third, indifference. And all three are necessary. The mind, guided by the intelligence, has to decide among all the different sensory inputs what to pay attention to and what not to pay attention to. And paying attention has different emotional charges, positive and negative. Some things we're attracted to and some things we're repelled by. Some things we like and some things we hate or fear. Hate means I don't want it, get rid of it. Fear means it can harm me, I have to get away from it. These emotional values are necessary for the preservation and prosperity of life. If our intelligence doesn't function, and we cannot distinguish between something that's good for us and something that's bad for us, if we have no feelings of attraction, hate, fear, then actually we can't survive in this world. These are preservation instincts necessary for survival. Not just the animals in the forest, but the human beings also. I'm standing in the middle of the road. A truck is coming at me very fast. I have to feel afraid and run away. Otherwise, I'll be smashed by the truck. I won't survive if I have no fear instinct. And similarly, my attraction and hate are necessary just to live in this world. I have to be attracted to good-tasting food and repelled by something that tastes foul and might be poisonous. If I don't have any distinction, if I have no sense of taste and no sense of discrimination, either I will fail to eat and starve because I have no appetite, or because I have an indiscriminate appetite, I'll eat something that makes me sick or kills me. So I need to feel this attraction and repulsion to live. These are the natural functions of the intelligence that are necessary for living in this world. Even in the spiritual world, they're exercised, but on a transcendental level, these functions. So Kamsa's advisors are appealing to this understanding that you can be attracted to the demigods, or you can hate them, fear them, or you can just ignore them. So they just finished arguing that we have no reason to fear the demigods. There's no need to argue that we shouldn't like the demigods. Kamsa doesn't have to be told, don't be friends with the demigods. That he doesn't have to be instructed about that. But he was advised, you don't have to fear them. They can't do anything to you. But the third alternative still remains. Well, should we just ignore them and go about our business and let them go about their business? And the advisors are telling him there, here, no. You cannot just ignore them. We have to treat them as enemies and extinguish them. Eliminate them. This is the argument. Natural function of hating and not neglecting someone, some object that is actually a threat to your existence. But it's unnatural when it's misapplied. There's nothing unnatural about the urges that these demons feel and express. But they're feeling and expressing them in inappropriate ways. You know, the demigods are not anyone's proper object of hate. These are the lords of the universe. These are the appointed servants of the Supreme Lord. If you hate them, then indirectly you're hating God by hating his representatives. It's almost as bad as hating the spiritual master who gives you Krishna consciousness. To have any disagreement with him, what to speak of actual hatred, means spiritual suicide. And it's also not very good for you if you hate the demigods who are providing the very necessities of your life. They may hate the sun god and the wind god, but they don't mind using the sunlight and the air to live, seeing with the light and breathing the air. And at the same time, they hate Suryadev and Vayu. What is that? They're benefactors. Our benefactors, we shouldn't hate them. It's not proper. Just like a child should not hate its parents. So the demons, they're expressing natural urges, but they're expressing them inappropriately. And that makes them demons. And the fact that Kamsa is so magnanimous that he doesn't kill his enemies, the demigods, when he gets a chance, that's not that much to his credit. He shouldn't consider them his enemies in the first place. Anyway, his advisors are now telling him that's okay on the battlefield, but now this is an emergency situation. The person who is fated to kill you is now somewhere hiding. You have to get eliminate this danger. It's an emergency situation. You have to take drastic measures. So therefore, anir dasham's cha, hanishyama. Let's go kill all the babies who are less than 10 years old, or even more than 10 days old. And if we kill them all, then we'll also, even though we don't know where he is, then we will have eliminated the threat of the eighth child of Vasudev. Pravittim cha nevittim cha jana na vidur asara. Na shocham na picha charo. Na satyam teshu vidyate. These are demons, by Krishna's definition. They don't know what to do and what to avoid doing. They don't have a proper understanding of what's clean and what's dirty. And they don't know how to behave properly. And they're not truthful. They're liars. Dishonest. People who are like this are in the category of demons. Hare Krishna. So any questions or comments? Yes, ma'am.
So these ministers were simple human beings. I mean, not in general, like,
yeah.
But still they are, how to say, brave enough to say that, let us fight. Let us kill those demigods. Like, yeah, Kamsa, let us fight. Let us finish. So how can we understand that they're so foolish or they're so strong, actually?
Well, they're not ordinary human beings. They're actually incarnations of demons coming down to the earth, many of them. these wizards who later came in various animal forms and strange forms to try to kill Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan. They're not ordinary human beings. They come from higher planets and have taken birth in order to participate in this great conflict between good and evil, you know, on the face of the earth. Okay, so they aren't. They're not earthlings, most of them. Yeah.
Thank you. I remember hearing that Narada Muni kind of, in some instances, he inspires, you know, demons to increase their demonic activity and quickly complete.
Yes.
So how do we explain
that? He's serving Yoga Maya to expedite Krishna's pastimes. You know, for the benefit of the devotees of Mathura, Narada encourages Kamsa to invite Nanda Maharaj and the cowherds to the festival, to the bow sacrifice in Mathura, to get Krishna and Balaram out of Vrindavan and into Mathura, and to help expedite the annihilation of Kamsa. You know, it's to move on Krishna's pastimes, is to further the purposes of Krishna's pastimes. Narada interferes in these ways. And he likes to do. He likes especially assignments that are crooked, you know, apparently helping the demons. But actually he's helping the pastimes. That's what his real interest is.
Like in this instance, he makes Nanda Maharaj send Krishna and Balaram. But in other instances, he talks to demons and, you know, suggests to them that, you know, I mean,
But in any of those cases, in any one of those cases, does the demon victorious in the end?
No, I mean,
the demons are destroyed in every case. So Narada is just helping the demons arrange to get destroyed. Yeah,
right.
He's arranging for their destruction by encouraging them to go ahead and do their nonsense.
My question is there a more mundane way to explain it? I mean, like, you know, somebody who's probably a new person to devotional service, he asks a question, this answer, other than this, can be explained at a different level?
I don't know. I think this is good enough for most people with a little brains, that Narada is very tricky, and he arranges, you know, to trick demons by encouraging them to get themselves in trouble. But they always get in trouble. By following his advice, they end up being destroyed. Yeah. You know, it's like the police setting up some, you know, ambush. You know, they send somebody out dressed as a prostitute to lure somebody, and then the man, you know, gives the money to the prostitute, and then you're under arrest. Yeah. So, like that, it's just a setup. Yeah. Police lady. Okay, anything else? Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.